Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
What a man, what a violin, what an artist, wrote Franz Liszt after attending a performance by Niccolo Paganini for the first time. Heavens, what sufferings, what misery, what tortures in those four strings. As to his expression, his manner of phrasing, they are his very soul, wrote Liszt. Liszt's life was forever changed by hearing Paganini play that evening in the spring of 1832. It was that transforming experience that caused Liszt to proclaim himself the Paganini of the piano. And the piano hasn't been the same since.
He was bowled over by that experience, and Liszt really changed the direction of the piano.
Alan Walker has made a career, literally, out of studying Liszt. He's written a 3-volume biography that's been called definitive, which is not surprising in that it took 25 years to complete.
He was the first modern pianist, and the reforms that he introduced into piano playing would guarantee him a place in the history books, even if he had died at the age of 35.
Reforms in piano playing? Hard to imagine what those might be, except when you start to think about it. For example, who decided pianists would play concerts from memory? It was our hero, Liszt. Until he came along, pianists in concert put music up on the music stand and played from that.
He was the first performing artist to realize that if you play from memory, it frees your imagination.
Clara Schumann, another great pianist of the day, joined Liszt in this memorization crusade. And they were positively pioneers. And now that we're thinking about it, who decided to place the piano in that classic position we now think of as the concert position, with the open top facing the crowd? That was Liszt, too.
His idea was that you don't only play the piano, but you play the building. He was one of the first to understand that buildings are musical instruments, and he experimented with a number of positions and finally came to the conclusion that the one in which the keyboard is running at right angles to the stage and the open lid reflecting the sound across the auditorium is the best from a purely musical point of view. His example has been followed ever since.
So he invented that too. Franz Liszt, I'll bet you didn't know, even created a new word for a solo performance by a musician, recital. He used it first in 1840, just after he'd begun his European tours.
And the very term recital was meant to imply that the piano was capable of sustaining an entire concert by itself. Until this point, solo pianists had usually put on programs with accompanying artists. But Liszt declared after Louis XIV, Le concert, c'est moi. I am the concert.
And he was indeed the concert. Listomania swept Europe as people, and in particular women, became fascinated with his playing and his spectacularly dynamic presentation of self. The stunning profile, the hair chin-length parted in the center, the impeccable dress, the ceremonial removal of his gloves before each performance, these have created the indelible impression of an early Elvis. Filmmakers, most notably Ken Russell, with his film Listomania, have pictured Liszt as a kind of visionary pop star, playing to crowds of young girls chanting his name and dissolving into puddles of ecstatic tears. And it was a little like that, according to descriptions of the time, much to the extreme disapproval of Liszt's friends and colleagues, Chopin, Schumann, and Brahms, who found this all rather distasteful. And even a modern-day virtuoso might be inclined to agree.
I am generally uncomfortable with the virtuosity for its own sake.
Marc-André Hamelin, the Canadian pianist, has been admired as a Liszt player.
Certain parts of Liszt's output do seem to exploit excessive virtuosity with little musical content.
But Hamelin has his favorites, such as the reminiscences on Bellini's Norma.
The Norma fantasy is one of the most noble works in the genre ever composed, I think. Such a sense of poison grandeur. Yes, there is an exploitation of virtuosity, but it's so well integrated.
That poise, the nobility, the grandeur in the music. We can see them now that time has passed. Maybe that's why the moment seems so right to begin to appreciate Liszt beyond his blinding virtuosity, and to note one more enormous contribution, an almost immeasurable one. Liszt raised the status of the artist, breaking a tradition that had seen the likes of Mozart forced to use the freight elevator, so to speak.
If you go back to the 18th century, even earlier, musicians are servants in the pay of the church or some noble family, and they often indeed did have to go in by the back door or wear livery or some other sign of their inferiority. With Beethoven, the position changed dramatically. He proclaimed that he was the equal of those people who paid him to be a composer. With Liszt, the process is carried a stage further, and he believed and often wrote about the fact that the artist was a kind of priest, or the bearer of the beautiful, the intermediary between God and man, a Promethean-like figure who brings fire down from heaven so that we lesser mortals can keep ourselves spiritually warmed and comforted from the art of music.
Liszt opened the front door to musicians, and they've never looked back. Except, perhaps, to nod in thanks. So you see, Liszt would have made a major contribution to music, even if he had never written this. Or this. Or this. Or this. Franz Liszt, composer, virtuoso pianist, social and musical innovator, and inventor of things now commonplace. It is rather overwhelming. Franz Liszt, Franz Liszt, Franz Liszt, Franz Liszt. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishkin.